An Introduction to Buddhism. Buddhism is a very practical, pragmatic philosophy. It's not involved in metaphysics. There really isn't a theology. The Buddha isn't worshipped. There's no deity. The Buddha was considered a very wise teacher, but not a god. Buddhism takes a very straightforward look at our human condition. Everything the Buddha taught was based on his own observation of the way things really are. As we look at our lives, we see that it's marked primarily with a lot of frustration and pain. And that's primarily because we find our, quote, security by attaching to things in the external environment, the world out there. However, what we truly find is that the world out there is constantly changing. Everything is impermanent, and it's really impossible to make a permanent relationship with anything. Everything begins and ends, comes and goes. What we consider security really isn't. It's an illusion. We come to the realization that everything is truly impermanent. And if we examine the notion of impermanence closely, we see that it's all pervading. Everything is marked by impermanence. Three things, pain, impermanence, and egolessness, are known in Buddhism as the three marks of existence. The Buddha proposed four noble truths. His first sermon after his enlightenment was about the Four Noble Truths. The first noble truth is that life is frustrating and painful. Things may be fine with us at the moment, but if we look around, we see other people, oftentimes in the most appalling conditions, children starving, terrorism, hatred, wars, intolerance, people being tortured. And we get this funny feeling, this queasy feeling, whenever we think about the world situation, in even the most casual way. We ourselves will someday grow old, get sick, and eventually die. No matter how we try to avoid it, someday, this life as we know it will end. Even though we try to avoid thinking about it, there are constant reminders everywhere we look. The second noble truth is that suffering has a cause. We suffer because we are constantly struggling to survive. We are constantly trying to prove our existence. We're constantly trying to define ourselves. But the harder we struggle to establish ourselves and our relationships, the more painful our experience can become. The third noble truth is that the cause of suffering can be ended. Our struggle to survive, our efforts to prove ourselves, is really unnecessary. We could just be a simple, direct, and straightforward person. We could form a simple relationship with our world, our spouse, and friends. We do this by abandoning our expectations about how we think things should be. This is the fourth noble truth, the way, or path, to end the cause of suffering. The central theme of this way is meditation. Meditation, in these terms, means the practice of mindfulness or awareness. We practice being mindful of all the things that we use to torture ourselves with. We become mindful of abandoning our expectations about the way we think things should be, and out of mindfulness, we begin to develop awareness about the way things really are. We begin to develop the insight that things are really quite simple, and our relationships very well, as soon as we stop being so manipulative and complex, are simple as well. The Buddhist doctrine of egolessness seems to be confusing to Westerners. There is confusion as to what is meant by ego. Ego, in the Buddhist sense, is quite different from the Freudian ego. The Buddhist ego is a collection of mental events classified into five categories, loosely translated as bundles or heaps. So what we notice is that there's a kind of primordial panic which produces confusion about what is happening. Rather than acknowledging this loss of confidence in the way things are, there was an identification with this panic and confusion, and ego began to form. This is known as the first skanda, the skanda of form. After the ego identification with confusion, ego begins to explore how it feels about the formation of this experience. If we like the experience, we try to draw it in. If we dislike it, we try to push it away or destroy it. If we feel neutral about it, we just ignore it. The way we feel about the experience is called the skanda of form. What we try to do about it is known as the skanda of impulse or perception. The next stage is to try to identify or label the experience. If we can just put it in a category, we can manipulate it better, or so we think. This is the skanda of concept. The final stage is the birth of the ego. It is called the skanda of consciousness. Ego begins to turn thoughts and emotions around and around. This makes ego feel solid and real. The turning around and around is called samsara, literally to whirl about. The way ego feels about its situation, the skanda of feeling, determines which of the six realms of existence it creates for itself. The six realms. If ego decides it likes the situation, it begins to turn up all sorts of ways to possess it. A craving to consume the situation arises, and we long to satisfy the craving. Once we do, a ghost of that craving carries over, and we look around for something else to consume. we get into the habitual pattern of becoming consumer-oriented. Perhaps we order a piece of software for our computer. We play with it for a while until the novelty wears out, and then we look around for the next piece of software that has some new capability. Soon we haven't even gotten the shrink wrapped off the current package when we start looking for the next one. It seems that owning something is not as important as wanting it, looking forward to its arrival. This is known in Buddhism as the hungry ghost realm, where we have made an occupation out of craving. We can never find satisfaction. It's like drinking salt water to quench our thirst. If we look at our own lives, we can determine how much time we spend craving, looking for the next best thing, what's right around the corner, but never being satisfied with what we have. Another realm is the animal realm, or having the mind like that of an animal. Here we find security by making certain that everything is totally predictable. We never take chances, we never look at new possibilities. The thought of new possibilities frightens us, and we look with scorn at anyone who suggests anything innovative. This realm is characterized by ignorance. We put on blinders and only look straight ahead, never to the right or left. Another realm is called the hell realm. It's characterized by severe aggression. We build a wall of anger between ourselves and our experience. Everything irritates us. Innocent statements drive us mad with anger. The heat of our anger is reflected back on us and sends us into a frenzy to escape, which in turn causes us to fight even harder and get even angrier. This whole process builds on itself until we don't even know if we're fighting with someone else or ourselves. We're so busy fighting that we can't find an alternative. The possibility of alternative never even occurs to us. These are the three lower realms. One of the three higher realms is called the jealous God realm. This pattern of existence is characterized by acute paranoia. We're always concerned with making it. Everything is seen from a competitive point of view. We're always trying to score points and trying to prevent others from scoring on us. If someone achieves something special, we become determined to outdo them. We never trust anyone. We know they're trying to slip one past us. If someone tries to help us, we try to figure out their angle. If someone doesn't try to help us, then we determine they're being uncooperative, and we make a mental note to ourselves that we'll get even later. The motto of the jealous God realm is "Don't get mad, get even." The human realm is the only one in which liberation from the six states of existence is possible. The human realm is characterized by doubt and inquisitiveness and the longing for something better. We are not as absorbed by the all-consuming preoccupations of the other states of being. We begin to wonder whether it is possible to relate to the world as simple, dignified human beings. The Buddha gave us a path to follow to end suffering, that is called the Eightfold Path. This is the path to liberation from these miserable states of being. The first point on the path is called right view, the right way to view the world. Wrong view occurs when we impose our expectations onto things, expectations about how we hope things will be, or about how we are afraid things might be. Right view occurs when we see things simply as they are. It is an open and accommodating attitude. We abandon hope and fear and take a joy in simple, straightforward approaches to life. The second point on the path is called right intention. It proceeds from right view. If we're able to abandon our expectations, our hopes and fears, we no longer need to be manipulative. We don't have to try to con situations into our preconceived notions of how they should be. We work with what is. Our intentions are pure. The third aspect of the path is right speech. Once our intentions are pure, we no longer have to be embarrassed about our speech. Since we aren't trying to manipulate people, we don't have to be hesitant about what we say. Nor do we need to try to bluff our way through a conversation with any sort of phony confidence. We say what needs to be said, very simply, in a genuine way. The fourth point on the path is right discipline, which involves a kind of renunciation. We give up our tendency to complicate issues. We practice simplicity. We have a simple, straightforward relationship with our dinner, our job, our house, and our family. We give up all the unnecessary and frivolous complications that we usually try to cloud our relationships with. The fifth step on the path is right livelihood. Often, many of us don't particularly enjoy our jobs. We can't wait to get home from work and begrudge the amount of time that our job takes away from our enjoyment of the good life. Perhaps we might wish we had a more glamorous job. We don't feel that our job in a factory or office is in keeping with the image we want to project. The truth is that we should be glad for our job, whatever it is. We should form a simple relationship with it, not making it less important or more important. We just need to perform it properly, with attention to detail. The sixth aspect of the path is right effort. Wrong effort is struggle. We often approach a spiritual discipline as though we need to conquer our evil side and promote our good side. We are locked in combat with ourselves and try to completely get rid of the tiniest negative tendency. Right effort doesn't involve struggle at all. When we see things as they are, we can work with them gently and without any kind of aggression whatsoever. The seventh point, right mindfulness, involves precision and clarity. We are mindful of the tiniest details of our experience. We are mindful of the way we talk, the way we perform our jobs, our posture, our attitude towards our friends, every detail. And finally, the eighth point of the path is right concentration or absorption. We are absorbed in absent-mindedness usually, Our minds are completely captivated by all sorts of entertainment and speculations. Right absorption, or concentration, means that we are completely absorbed in nowness, in things as they are. This can only happen if we have some sort of discipline, such as sitting meditation. We might even say that without the discipline of sitting meditation, we can't walk the Eightfold Path. Sitting meditation cuts through our absent-mindedness. It provides a space or gap in our preoccupation with ourselves. So what is the goal of Buddhism, the goal of the Eightfold Path? We've heard the term nirvana, but in the West, we've equated that with a sort of version of heaven. Actually, nirvana simply means cessation. It is the cessation of aggression and ignorance, the cessation of the struggle to prove our existence in the world, to survive. We don't have to struggle to survive after all. We have already survived. We survive now. The struggle was just an extra complication that we added to our lives because we had lost our confidence in the way things are. We find that we no longer need to manipulate things as they are and turn them into things as the way we would like them to be. So this introduction to Buddhism helps us see Buddhism is about simplicity. It's about looking directly at our experience. It's about being aware, being mindful of what is occurring, letting go of stories, fantasies, letting go of the way you think things should be, and just allowing things to be as they are. Buddhism is truly a simple philosophy, a simple way of being.